Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, and Trumpet Radio Live on Tuesday. It's Tuesday edition. Here's what's coming up. Illegal immigration is causing problems in the United States. We have a few stories related to that. Also, climate change scientists are making some pretty big claims, but they've also been caught lying about a few things. We have two stories there. And this one's really interesting, especially Churchill's bid to cover up Duke's link to the Nazis. Some history there that we'll look at later in today's program. That and more in this edition of Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live. We're at 101.3 KPCG and online at kpcg.fm. Live link here at thetrumpet.com as well, so thanks for joining us in those various locations. I'm Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon, Abraham Blondeau here today. Rainy day in Edmond, Oklahoma. I haven't watched the weather in a while. Kind of caught me off guard. It's been raining pretty good this morning. We needed it. I think we've been dry, and so we have a real nice rain going. So I'm loving it. Are you guys rain fans like I am?
Well, I was sitting in the living room for about an hour this morning before I realized it was actually raining. It was just a constant hum outside, and so I never really caught on to that for quite a while. But yeah, rain is fantastic.
I think when you don't have it all the time, you appreciate it. I think people in more rainy climates like Washington, Oregon, places like that, probably not as excited about it as I am, but I'm enjoying it. What about you, Abraham?
Yeah, I like the rain, especially not too much of it though. But it's nice to have, especially in the summer after a hot few weeks. And this morning when I woke up, I thought my wife had the tap running for a long time. I'm like, what is wrong with her? Like, why? It's been going on for like 15 minutes. Then I'm like, oh, it's the rain.
Never and the mind. Tap was going as well. Both of them. So first day. Hey, it's the first day of August in Oklahoma. It's only going to be 80 degrees for a high today, and there's rain. So I mean, that's pretty rare.
Can't beat that.
Yeah, we'd usually be up close to 100. So we're enjoying it while we can here in the Oklahoma area. Some stories to get to today. This one's there's two here about the illegal immigration that's happening in the United States. It's interesting how a lot of times now in the media they just refer to it as immigration, as if they're leaving out the illegal part. But there is an illegal immigration situation, and there's two sides, I guess, to the coin as far as the way the media would present it. A lot of media outlets present it as sort of people have been here and now they're victims because they're being sent back. There's a story here. Ohio mom set for deportation following a traffic violation. Lady didn't have a driver's license. She got picked up. Turned out she's here illegally, and so she's set for deportation. She's been here for about two decades. She's got four kids, I think. So the whole story kind of focuses on the tragedy of her being ripped away from her family. So, I mean, in some ways you would feel bad for that situation. It is an illegal situation, but that's what they're focusing on. However, there's another story that, Grant, you have, and this is a common one too, unfortunately, from Fox News. Portland's sanctuary policies to blame for horrific rapes, says GOP leader. So a lot of times I'll focus on the situation where it seems like the person being deported, it's a tragedy, but then there's this other side when there's terrible crimes being committed in some of these sanctuary cities.
Yeah, just last week, this man had been deported 20 times and just came back in every single one of those times he was deported. And apparently he raped two women last week. One was a 65-year-old woman. He broke into her home, and it wasn't like the other woman was nearby. He went to an apartment's parking garage after that and raped someone else.
Same day?
Yes.
Wow. So obviously it gets to a point with some people where They've broken laws so many times, apparently they don't care, and they're just extremely hardened criminals. So, you know, there are stories on both sides of the fence here, but at the end of the day, there is a problem with the illegal immigration, and that's something that I think, from what I've read, they've tried to increase deportations. But, I mean, you do have to step in, I think, if you're going to remain a sovereign nation, you have to step in and start enforcing laws. and if you don't, you don't have a nation anymore, I guess. It's just a lawless place where anyone can do what they want.
The Oregon State Republican chairman actually did blame Portland's sanctuary city policy on the fact that this guy was even in the country. He shouldn't have been able to come back so many times. It's sort of like catch and release, but you know he's going to come back, so you have to catch him again. It's just a huge burden on law enforcement as well. It's just a horrible situation here that really didn't have to take place. And even the other times he'd been in the country, he was committing a lot of serious crimes as well. It wasn't like his only crime was crossing the border illegally. He has a lengthy criminal record in three different states, charges including battery, felony, burglary, and felony illegal reentry after removal. So, of course, that's how he's been in the country 20 times. But this is a hardened criminal, like you said. It's not just someone who is fleeing a bad situation in a different country and is trying to make an honest life here in America.
And that's what gets really tough about people that are trying to maybe get around the basic law, because then you have to start judging individual cases. You know, does the law apply to everyone, or does it just apply to people that are going to do bad things? And how would you know? That's where it gets murky. It's so much easier if there's just a law and people follow the law, and then you don't have the problems.
What we have is certain cities that decide not to do that. At Portland, whenever they catch guys like this who shouldn't be in the country, they don't even bother to notify the federal authorities. And even if the federal authorities came asking, they would not help out to get someone like this out of the country. And then sure enough, you have two women suffer for it who didn't have to. This person didn't even have to be in the country. Clearly, the people making policies like this have no connection to what is happening to people in this country because of their own policies. They don't even seem to care that people are suffering horribly because of this.
I do wonder what the legal ramifications are. Can the victims sue the city?
Definitely should be able to.
I wonder if that's happened. There's a case a few years ago where there was a family, weren't they in San Francisco, kind of sightseeing, and they got killed, or somebody got killed by somebody that was here illegally?
I think the daughter got killed.
Yeah, seemed like there was some sort of charges lawsuit or something. I don't remember what happened with that. But if you were the victim or your family was the victim, I think you'd be thinking, well, hey, somebody owes us something for this.
It's really true. I mean, this is just a case of total lawlessness causing pain, and that's what lawlessness does every single time. This is a city where a judge was actually accused of letting an illegal immigrant slip out of her courtroom through the employee exit to avoid ICE agents who were out in the hallway. So she basically, or this judge basically snuck an illegal out the back door to avoid being captured. And this is this type of stuff going on in Portland and in a lot of these other sanctuary cities, because apparently they are just in love with these illegals. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense besides the fact that obviously they're going to vote Democrat. I don't know what else is the motivation for having them here.
Well, it raises another interesting point. And we've seen it, I think, with a few judges where they're kind of setting themselves up like they're the lawmakers. They're the deciders. And I mean, within a certain realm, I suppose they are. They have to make a judgment on the law, but to ignore the law or to let somebody run out the back door or overturn travel bans at their whims, where does that power stop? Are they above the law? That's an interesting question.
And on top of that, who do you think is going to pay for his defense in court, this man who committed two rapes last week?
Yeah, terrible, terrible situation. You really feel for the people that are victimized by those types of things. And of course, you know, they can always find a few stories like this other one here where somebody's getting deported and they tug at your heartstrings. You feel bad for the situation, but you built your whole life through lies. So, and now it's come and due. Too bad. I mean, it is a really an unfortunate thing, but that's a choice people make at some point.
And don't we all kind of experience that where the bad people in a group sort of make it worse for the entire group? Obviously, they're all illegals and shouldn't be here in the first place. But the fact that there are people going around committing rape, that doesn't make it too desirable to keep any of them here once they've snuck in. And we've all experienced that being on a sports team. If someone messes up, the whole team is punished for it in practice. That's just how it goes. And maybe that's not fair in the eyes of some people. But the bottom line here is every single one of them has broken a law, and there is a penalty to be paid for that.
Right. Yeah, the law has to stand, and no one can be above the law, or else you don't have a civilization anymore, I guess. So.
Yeah, it's these sanctuary cities are madness because, to me, these mayors are setting themselves up as kings, defying the federal government and deciding, well, my city is going to be different than the rest of the country. You don't have the authority to do that, and especially when your own constituents and people in your city are suffering for it. I imagine with the sanctuary idea, some people benefit from it in a sense that I'm sure some people, not all of them are criminals, but the criminals take advantage of it because it's basically a jail, a free card for committing crimes. And so I'm sure a lot of people who are sympathetic to immigrants like the idea because it can help people like that mother, I guess, it's still in an illegal way. But the criminals take advantage of it, and that's the danger, is you're opening a door for people who don't have the best of heart to take advantage of your generosity and all that. It's just very naive, and it just sets a terrible precedent because, well, what's next? What are we going to start having sanctuaries for? And it just could spiral out of control.
That's the thing, too. It does seem like all the sympathy these people, these policymakers have, is for people who don't even belong here at all. It's for non-Americans. If you feel so sympathetic toward them, go move down to Nicaragua or somewhere and rule from there. If those are your favorite people, then you go down there and serve them instead of making it worse for Americans while you're supposed to be serving Americans.
There's a legal path to do different things. There's some, just tremendous examples of people doing that, following the legal path. The U.S. is a place you can get into, but you have to do it legally. Another thing that pops up a fair bit is the fact that a lot of times people don't know how to drive. Even this woman they talked about from Ohio, I believe it was, she's pulled over for a traffic violation. She doesn't have a driver's license. Well, of course you don't have a driver's license because you can't get on the system. Does that mean everyone would be a horrible driver? Not necessarily, but there's plenty that are. And you see about car accidents where families are killed, and lo and behold, person didn't have a driver's license, don't know how to drive, don't know the rules of the road. Just even that, no, maybe it wasn't intentional, but it still is a fruit of breaking the law at some point. You're not going to bring that family back, you know, that died, you see that in the news pop up quite often. But again, it's a result of not going through and getting, you know, the proper training. Not to say you couldn't have an accident anyway, but when you don't have your license in the first place, obviously that's going to be it's a good sign that you probably don't know how to drive very well.
Well, we had that experience here just a few miles down the road where a prominent sportscaster was killed by an illegal who was just driving recklessly and obviously fled the scene of the accident after killing that man. That's what happens. If you're breaking a law, you're also going to flee, and the police are going to have to chase you too. Everything is made worse. And I know from experience, because my wife's from South Africa, that everything is more inconvenient if you try to be here illegally. You have to get it paid for. You have to go through the process the right way, because it's right. You can't get a license. I mean, you can't have a social security number, which you need to set up a bank account or anything. I mean, pretty much everything is made inconvenient by breaking the law. So we don't want people to have to come here and then suffer all these inconveniences and all of these unnecessary issues just because they're not obeying the law.
And you have to live in fear that at any moment you could be discovered. That's not a good way to live either. So that happened the other day. Actually, we were driving back locally here from town. Somebody pulls up, it came up next to me, started coming over into my lane, and I slowed down just to let them pass. And what is this person doing? I don't know their situation or anything, but they look like they probably didn't have a license by the looks of them and the vehicle and everything. And texting at the same time. Not just texting, not with like the phone on the steering wheel, which is bad enough, but holding it over in the other seat, basically. And I stayed behind the person on purpose. They kept going at different speeds, over the limit, under the limit, the whole works. And I thought, I'm just staying behind them. I got my family in the car. I can't take a chance on this person. At least if they're in front of me, I can see what they're doing. And they went the same way I did for a few miles. And I just watched them weave in, weave out, you know, look at the phone, weave across. I don't think knew how to drive. Certainly didn't care. thankfully they turned, and I just thought, well, if they get into an accident, I hope they just drive into a tree and don't kill somebody. It's craziness.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a huge problem. I mean, obviously, if you're even talking about illegals, I don't know what that situation was.
It wouldn't be a stretch to think that might have been the case, but I don't know.
But we've talked about it before. If you're willing to break the law to cross into a country illegally, which, I mean, that's something like that has never crossed my mind. There has to be a really low regard for law in that person's life. So once a person like that gets here, it's not going to be a good situation. I mean, those people are not going to have any respect for the laws of this country, and you can see it by a person driving like that with no concern for anyone else, no concern for keeping the law. That's the type of people who are going to come here. The rule breakers, by definition, are coming here because they're already breaking a law just to get into the country.
Yeah, it's a bad situation, and it continues to be an issue here in the U.S. and in Europe, too. They've got their issues in different places. Here's an interesting write-up. This is related to climate change. Abraham has got a story here from the Daily Mail. Global warming, they say, will cause 260,000 premature deaths from air pollution by 2100. Shocking study claims. Well, we won't be here to verify that. but before we jump right into that, here's another one today from the Australia Weather Bureau. They're caught tampering with climate numbers. Australian scientists at the Bureau of Meteorology, or BOM, ordered a review of temperature recording instruments after the government agency was caught tampering with temperature logs in several locations. They were fudging the data. This has happened several times, but yet we're supposed to believe these shocking study claims that everyone's going to be dead in 4,000 years. Probably so.
Well, this is interesting, and it's the headline's a little misleading because it says shocking study, but it's not really a study. It's a compilation of different climate change models. They take the globe, they track population growth, they project what industry will be like, all these things. And so they just have these computer simulations of what the world will have, what will happen to the world in the future with climate change and the environment. And so it's based on assumptions, and it's based on probabilities that aren't that well founded. And so I wouldn't put a whole lot of credence in it. But anyway, they have some pretty astounding claims. And these are the world's top climate change models. I'm sorry if I forgot to say that they're the top.
I wouldn't want to report from the bottom.
Yeah. here's what they found. There will be hotter temperatures. It will speed up chemical reactions that create air pollutants like ozone, fine particle matter, etc. And that impacts human health. Locations will get drier and have worse air pollution because there will be less rain to remove pollutants. There will be a lack of rain. Will also bring an increased fire risk, windblown dust, all that sort of thing. Trees with higher temperatures, they release organic pollutants. Rising toxic air pollution adds to other risks of death from climate change, including heat stress, a lack of clean water and food, severe storms, and the spread of infectious diseases. So that's what this model found, basically projecting that because of climate change, there'll be mass drought, trees will start polluting the atmosphere, people won't have food or water, you'll have smog and all these things. And basically, it amounts to 260,000 people dying in about 80 years or so. So that's what they think. And it's interesting just because you can see the doom and gloom of the projection and assuming that the world's just going to fall apart on itself. And I mean, they're not too far off. There are lots of huge problems in the world, but I just think it's ironic that they're so sure of themselves that they project that all these very specific events will happen because of climate change. Never mind what mankind's doing on the side. It's just because of climate change.
Well, I just envision these scientists typing in the variables for their model, and they're just talking about ultimate calamity and destruction. I mean, if they already believe in climate change, it would seem like they have a lot of control over how their model turns out as well. I don't know how valuable their evidence is there.
Well, and that's the thing about making these either predictions forward or claiming something from the past that is quite a ways away either direction. There's really nobody to sit there and definitively say yes or no to those things. So that's pretty easy. Why not? I mean, I could probably make a pretty good model for the next, like, 3,000 years from now. Who's going to know? I mean, who's going to know whether or not? Plus, yeah, if you're just entering data and you don't like the way it looks, couldn't you just bump the temperature a couple degrees? They do it now and say, ah, look what's going to happen. Well, of course, if you bump the temperature a few degrees one way or the other, you probably have a few things. And the fact that they're that concerned about 260,000 premature deaths, how many premature deaths are there today by other things?
Good point.
And including climate change. But, you know, when they talk about climate change, how about all the cancers we see in people? That's and the chemicals. That to me would be a bigger issue than, say, the air temperature outside.
Yeah, well, I think that's what kind of surprised me about the headline, is that they say all 260,000 people die prematurely, which is...
And define prematurely. I mean, did they have a exact date?
Before they, like, anything before they die of old age, I guess. Like, they'll die from a natural disaster, a disease because of climate change or that sort of thing.
Well, you know, if you were, when you were young, they told you you're going to die prematurely, but they didn't tell you when. You know, that would be horrible. You'd be scared of it your whole life. Maybe that means instead of living to 90, you live to 87. I mean, would it be that big of a deal? We don't know exactly what we mean here by prematurely.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing that, I mean, that is quite a few people, but we have millions of people in the U.S. that die a year from multiple
drugs.
Yeah, drugs, car accidents, many different diseases, most of them that are caused by lifestyle choices, not from happenstance.
You know, it's so crazy, too. They talk about this war on climate change, okay? But then in the same breath, people will mock the war on drugs. They say, it's a failure. Didn't work. So if we couldn't even stop something that we make in the first place and distribute, what would make people think we could stop the natural processes of ocean currents and you know, wind and so forth? I mean, we can't even stop the things we have control over. Why would we have any control over those things?
And couldn't we come up with like 100 more imminent threats to humanity than climate change? And yet I don't see the same amount of money going into those different projects trying to stop those problems. I don't see the same amount of hysteria and meltdowns over those different issues like the war on drugs. And yet everyone is freaking out about climate change.
My kid, my daughter just watched a little bit of that show Ice Age Meltdown.
Oh, yes.
So that's the model I'm going off of. But the animals were talking, so things were changing, I guess.
Yeah, and there were still acorns. But I think that's a great point, just that I was just doing some research earlier, and 50 million people died from World War II. That's a low estimate. It could be up to 80 million. And so that happened just in 5 years. And so to think that in 80 years that this will be the biggest threat, they're not necessarily saying this, but I think they're implying it, that the biggest threat to mankind is climate change. When no one expected wars and different things to come, but it claimed 50 million people the last time in the pre-nuclear age. So it's just foolish to think that something like that won't happen before. And all the other disasters caused by man. I mean, I just finished writing an article about obesity,
right,
and how 25% of people between the ages of 17 and 24 in the United States could pass basic PT. Or the physical training test in the military. That means 75% can't. And all it is doing 31 push-ups in 2 minutes, 47 sit-ups in 2 minutes, and running 2 miles in about 17 minutes.
Hmm.
For the men. That's all you have to do.
That's pretty general, basic.
It's not too difficult.
Yeah, but 75%, that's about 25 million young people in the United States are too obese, or they have other health problems from drugs and different things that they can't do that. I mean, obesity itself will kill well over 250,000 people before 2100 in this country. But yet, there aren't too many studies or whistleblowing about that. It's just a huge sideshow from not only from war, which is the biggest threat, but also our rampant health problems that are literally rotting America from the inside out.
Yeah, those are great points. So that's a new study. You know, and whenever they come out with these new models showing what's going to happen down the road, I always feel like, why not just go for broke on it? You know, why not just say it's going to be 2 trillion people? Just make it really astounding. You know, the trees will come out and fight the humans. And I mean, why not? Why not just go for it?
Well, that's right. They say 260,000 by the year 2100. And yet, even though that might sound like a lot, it's so small if you consider all these other problems that are killing more people than that all the time right now. It's not in, what is that, 80 some years? I mean, that's... it's not even close, and yet we're talking way more about something that's way down the road.
There's a lot of good write-ups on thetrumpet.com about the climate change and some of the politics behind that, so make sure you check those out for a good synopsis of all of that. Yeah, speaking of climate change, your waste mainly, this is from Fox News. Cheesecake Factory chilies are honored, quote-unquote, at the Extreme Eating Awards for having the unhealthiest dishes. So this is like winning a Razzie in the movies. You're honored, sort of, but not really, because it means things aren't good. Has announced the results of its annual Extreme Eating Awards, and that's extreme with just an X at the beginning, just to keep it edgy for the kids, which honor the fattiest, most caloric, and all-around unhealthiest dishes from the country's most popular chain restaurants. This year's honors were shared by the likes of Buffalo Wild Wings, Chili's, IHOP, and Uno Chicago Pizzeria, among other popular chains. I've never heard of that Chicago Pizzeria one. You ever heard of that?
No. I saw that was a game, Uno.
Must not be in this part of the country, or I haven't seen it. They say, but perhaps the biggest winner of the night was the Cheesecake Factory, which took the top prize in both the worst adapted pasta and the worst cocktail design categories for its pasta Napoletana entree and Flying Gorilla cocktail, respectively. You think you were making this up? The Cheesecake Factory's pasta dish, a plate of Parmesan cream pasta topped with meatballs, sausage, pepperoni, and bacon, was found to be one of the unhealthiest dishes on any restaurant chain's menu, containing an estimated 2,310 calories. That's before the cheesecake comes. 4,370 milligrams of sodium and 79 grams of saturated fat in just one serving. As was noted in this report, that's over a day's worth of calories, almost twice the recommended daily intake of sodium, and nearly 4 times the recommended daily intake of saturated fat. The Cheesecake Factory, too, earned an accolade for its Flying Gorilla cocktail, a booze-infused milkshake which is packed with an estimated 950 calories, 46 grams of saturated fat, and 60 attagrams of sugar.
Wow.
Can you imagine if you got those two things together? They roll you out of there in a wheelbarrow.
Man, for the Flying Gorilla cocktail, I'm just thinking of them serving a cocktail with a gorilla and a cape, like, hanging off the side of it or something like that.
The mental picture I had was giving it to a gorilla. He takes a drink, gets mad, and throws it at you.
And then starts flying.
Yes.
Obviously.
The Cheesecake Factory, we talked about that. They say other notable winners of the 2017 Extreme Eating Awards included IHOP, which won the Least Original Breakfast Award with its cholesterol-laden cheeseburger omelet. Dave & Buster's, which won the Worst Original Appetizer category with its cheeseburger pizzadilla. It was like an animal.
Oh, wow.
A cheeseburger pizza quesadilla hybrid. And Chili's, which took the Worst Visceral Effects title for its ultimate smokehouse combo meal, which is served on a big metal tray. So whenever you talk about climate change, I mean, in all seriousness, look what we're putting in our bodies. Not that everybody eats these meals, but the other ones aren't that far off. And, you know, I've been to those places time or two, so I can't be above the fray necessarily. But if you make a habit of going there, you're not going to be worried about the climate outside. It's the climate inside your body that's going to be causing you problems.
I do really appreciate the awards there because a lot of people, a lot of my friends are foodies, as they say, and I'm the exact opposite. I don't care about food, but I'm finally glad someone's calling these restaurants out on some of the ridiculous meals they have. And it is funny to see them all compared and everything, but it is a good reminder, too, of what's in the menus. I mean, those are probably the worst, but everything above them in the menu or below them probably isn't that much better.
Well, and the thing about it, too, is if you've been to those restaurants, which most have, very rarely do you just get that dish. You usually have a drink. When you go to Cheesecake Factory, they bring out bread and butter for you, which is pretty good. So you got all that. Then there might be an appetizer. Then you've got that meal. if you're going to the Cheesecake Factory and you don't get a cheesecake, what are you doing? That's why you're there. So you got that thing coming. You know, I mean, now, I think a lot of people probably kind of do what I do. If we go with the family, we can probably get by with one or two dishes, and we just split it because it's too much to eat. Or it's you take it with you and you get a meal the next day or something, you know, as well. And don't get me wrong. I mean, it's delicious. But yeah, if you're going to sit down and put that away, that's a lot of calories. That's probably not the meal of the day, right? That's probably one of several. So you can see why people are getting into trouble.
And it's understandable, too, why restaurants might actually take this as a source of pride, because people are not going to a restaurant like theirs to, you know, be conscientious of their diet.
Right.
They're going to splurge a little bit and try something rich and deluxe. And so that's what they're doing. And apparently they have achieved their mission to create some things like that.
It's pretty amazing the stuff that's out there. But if you want to lose weight, here's some good news. You should just sleep more. These studies have come out before, but it is interesting because this is an area that's easy to overlook. They say people who don't get the recommended amount of sleep each night are more likely to be overweight and have larger waistlines, according to a new study published in Plus One, plus with an O for some reason. But what the study didn't find was the real surprise. They showed the results had no relationship between poor sleep and a less healthy diet. In other words, sometimes people say, well, if you don't get enough sleep, then you don't eat as well, and which could be true, but they say that they didn't find that to be those two things to be necessarily related. It just kind of came down to if you're not getting enough sleep, you're going to gain more weight. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that your body has to run a lot of maintenance and a lot of processes at night when you're sleeping. If you don't get enough sleep there, you're shortchanging yourself. And surprisingly, you don't lose as much weight as you would otherwise.
And probably the longer we're awake as well, there's like several more hours that we could be eating.
Yeah.
So that alone would mean that sleeping is probably a good thing.
Yeah. So that's something that in our society, it sleep is kind of minimalized, but it is important.
Yeah, I remember this. There's this new challenge out there. It's called the 10,000 calorie challenge. And basically, in one day, you eat 10,000 calories, which is ridiculous.
Just stop by a Cheesecake Factory.
Yeah. And then you, and then the next day, you try to work it all off with working out.
That sounds crazy.
And wow. Yeah. It's was one fitness guy I watch sometimes. He was trying to do it, so he ate all the food. And he's a bodybuilder. He's a triathlete. He's in pretty good shape, and he's very well conditioned. And so he started trying to work off. He started at midnight. He ran a few miles, then he went back to sleep, and then he started really early in the morning. And he said he'd pretty much have to work out for 8 hours straight to burn off the calories. And he worked out for about 3 hours in a row, which was running, like rowing, all these different swimming, all these things, and he only burned about a third of it off, about 3,500 calories after 3 hours of just solid exercise.
Wow. Yeah.
And the point of the challenge is to prove to everyone that you can't work off a bad diet. If you're eating poorly, you're not going to be able to burn off the calories that you're putting into yourself, especially if they're bad calories. And so that just was a very dramatic illustration that if you eat too much, if you're not sleeping, if you're not exercising, your body's not going to get rid of it.
Lo and behold, it gets back to moderation, doesn't it? You don't have to work out for 3, 4, 5 hours a day if you're eating properly, getting enough rest. You need exercise, but you don't need to go that far. But then again, you don't need to eat crazy, and you don't need to do all those things. So it does get back to moderation, which is they should have the moderation challenge. See how people do with that. It's not extreme enough. They need something more extreme. You're listening to Trumpet Radio Live here on 101.3 KPCG. The show has no calories. Kia David program's coming up here in a bit. Also, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with Stephen Fleury today from Edstone, England. And make sure you stop by thetrumpet.com and check out today's headlines. The Great American Solar Eclipse of August 21st. A fulfillment of Bible prophecy, Many religious commentators say the upcoming solar eclipse is a sign of the end. Does the Bible support these claims? By Jeremiah Jacques. And also, Blood Moons, Do They Fulfill Prophecy? That's a related story by Dennis Leap. So make sure you stop and check those out at thetrumpet.com. People that play the lottery, which we are not those people, but some do, and usually lose. But sometimes people win. And some people win a lot. There was a California teenager who claimed over $600,000 after winning the lottery twice in a single week. It's always funny to see these people like a year on. They're usually in much worse case, in much, much worse condition. Rosa Dominguez's two $5 scratch-off tickets made her $555,555 and $100,000. But the 19-year-old is not the first to have such extraordinary lottery luck. In Ohio, seven people have won the state lottery more than 100 times over the past 3 years. An April report showed one particularly lucky man has won it 150 times since 2014. But it doesn't mean you're going to have a big payout. I mean, I don't know what they pay out, but you could win $100 or $200, I think. I'm not sure how that pays out, but it's not like he won the mega Powerball, whatever they call it.
$400 million.
The $400 million prize. But it's interesting when people win those, oftentimes they end up in worse shape afterwards. People want the money and they end up broke and miserable.
Well, and that, those people who win a lot, either they are lucky or they're working the system and they're buying so many tickets or scratch-offs, whatever, however they enter into it, that they're pretty much making themselves broke, trying to get the best odds, I guess.
Yeah, in Florida, there was an Orlando man. He claims to have won lottery prizes seven times, with his total winnings amounting to more than $1 million. He revealed his winning lottery method in a self-published handbook. So apparently there's a method. In Virginia, a couple from Portsmouth won two $1 million prizes and a $50,000 prize in the state lottery during 1 month in 2014. They said it was a blessing from the Lord. I doubt that.
Well, lotteries are often described as a tax on the poor. And so what that kind of means is that people who don't have the money for it are often spending the money on the lottery. So maybe that also means that those who are not as good with their money, those who are at that lower income level, they're getting a huge amount of money once they actually win, and they were never managing the money they had right in the first place. That's why they were even buying the lottery tickets. So you can't really expect someone in that situation who just made $100 million to use it wisely.
Yep, it gets to be addictive, and people have a lot of problems with it. Like they say, I guess out in Vegas, the house always wins. They're always going to take more than they'll give you a little prize here and there to keep you going, but they're going to get your money in the end. Grant, you've got a write-up here from townhall.com. This is an interesting title. Interested to hear what this is about. Can a conservative conduct an orchestra?
Yes, this is from Dennis Prager, and some of the listeners may have seen some of his videos. In an entertaining 5-minute video, he is able to dismantle an entire leftist ideology or concept. It's very entertaining. It's very captivating. And basically what he's doing is putting out an information campaign, because there are a lot of people who have been indoctrinated by false ideas lately, especially in modern education with a lot of these communist-friendly ideas. And he is able to dismantle them. So here's someone who is an open conservative. It's his main job. You'll see him on Fox News a lot. He has his own website and a lot of his own videos, of course. But he also enjoys music, and he conducts a lot of orchestras, symphonies for free. The thing is, there are people who are trying to boycott him doing that. He's just spreading music, which he believes should be free of politics, yet people are boycotting him because of his politics.
Well, yeah, it's in the current climate for sure. If somebody's going to come out and be kind of loud, particularly take more of a conservative stance, they're going to become a lightning rod for a lot of angry feelings, I guess. I mean, we've seen that with a few pretty well-known personalities. I'm trying to think of the guy's name, the pitcher for ESPN. He was
Curt Schilling.
He was fired. He made some comments. There's been a few others that have – he's probably the most notorious, I guess. But there's been a few others where if they said some political things, they ended up losing jobs, particularly if it was more conservative. So when a guy like this, you know, makes these types of videos and things, I guess he's that's just what he's going to have to expect. Not that he should have to, but the climate that we're in, that's kind of the way it goes, even though conducting an orchestra really has nothing to do with politics yet. Because of his politics, people aren't going to come, I guess.
Exactly, and you really couldn't be talking about a nicer person. Dennis Prager is like a kind old grandfather figure. He never tries to force his views on other people, but he does believe what he believes, and he puts it out there in a totally legal, acceptable way. It's not invasive on anyone else. It's not bigotry like some people are trying to claim, yet they're still boycotting him. And we've already seen this happening on campuses with conservative speakers. This isn't even him going somewhere to tell his ideas. He's just conducting a symphony, and people don't even like that. They're actually going so far as to object to the very presence of a conservative in the same room as them.
It's interesting. I mean, it's not as extreme as, say, communist Russia, but it's not that far away either, because, you know, in nations like that, you could not express your opinion if it wasn't whatever the party line was. And in this case, we're talking about the liberal ideology, or you would have some real problems. People lived in fear and they had to keep quiet. That shouldn't be the case in a democracy.
Well, so what this reminds me of is the communist blacklist during the 50s, 60s, 70s, especially in Hollywood. Except it was flipped. The conservatives put a bunch of communist filmmakers on a blacklist. They had to leave the country. They couldn't make films in the United States anymore because they were fearful that Russia and the communists were going to use them to indoctrinate the American people. But eventually they're allowed to come back. But they couldn't work, they couldn't go anywhere because they're on this list. And it's almost becoming like that today, except it's reversed, where if you're a conservative politician, intellectual thinker, and you're speaking or you're doing anything, every aspect of your life is like you're on a blacklist and you just can't do things that normal people can do or that everyone else can do.
So this gentleman trying to conduct these orchestras, are people just not coming? Is he being banned, boycotted? Like, how are they dealing with him?
Well, what happened was about half a year ago, the conductor of the Santa Monica Symphony Orchestra asked him to conduct the orchestra. I guess in the program, Dennis Prager will conduct for free in the first half, and then the actual conductor will come up there and he'll conduct the orchestra and what they've actually been doing on their own time. So Dennis Prager is only involved for part of it, and then the other part of it's the actual conductor. But this conductor asked if Dennis Prager would be involved at a performance at the Walt Disney Concert Hall, and three members of that orchestra boycotted, two of the three being college professors at UCLA. So here's a situation where you have one who teaches political science and another one teaching history. Imagine how damaging that is, a leftist teaching U.S. history, for example. A big problem. And not only will they continue to indoctrinate students at their universities and in their classrooms, they're also going to boycott and blacklist any conservative they come into contact with, apparently.
It's like a chain of intimidation, you know, to where you could see maybe somebody wouldn't have a problem, you know, playing in the orchestra, but because they know they would take heat for it, they don't. And that, you know, how it kind of can go just down the line to where you don't even want to be associated with somebody that would be on this conservative side because your whole peer group or whatever would be upset with you. So it's amazing how peer pressure takes a big toll on people, even I mean, our whole lives. You know, it's easy to think that it's just sort of like a grade school thing or a high school thing, but peer pressure is a big deal, and it's a bullying campaign, really, with a lot of the stuff that happens in the media these days, and some of things like this, where, you know, people are being bullied to not even play with somebody that would be a conservative because they don't want to be. They don't want to take the heat themselves for it, you know, that be bullied themselves. So it's an intimidation factor.
Exactly. And a common tactic of the left is to attack someone's livelihood. Dennis Prager doesn't get paid to conduct these orchestras. But like you mentioned, if they're intimidating other members of the orchestra not to play, you know, that could damage those musicians' careers. If they're found out to be fine with playing with Dennis Prager, there could be certain companies that won't hire them in the future. That's really what we're getting down to, is trying to affect people's basic ability to make a living just over the ideas that they might have in their head that they're not even necessarily proselytizing with. It's just really extreme. Those three people who were boycotting playing in the symphony said a concert with Dennis Prager would normalize hatred and bigotry. And a couple of those examples of his hatred and bigotry apparently are that when giving a child up for adoption, the preferred couple that adopts that child should be a man and a woman who are married, instead of turning a child over to singles or to same-sex couples. Even though the stats are abundantly clear that a married couple raises children better, the kids are most likely to have success. That is an idea really built around love for the child. That's not bigotry at all. And another example is that Prager often says, if there's no God, then ethics are subjective, or there's no true black and white. There is no true black, no true right or wrong, unless there is a God deciding those things.
Yeah, those are things that won't be real popular, but the numbers would be on his side in those arguments. That's interesting. It's a difficult time to be somewhat conservative for now, but there are plenty of people that are, and I think there is a battle going on. I mean, the nation's split, right? About half, give or take, the coasts versus the middle, and you know, it'll be interesting just to see how these things sort of play out, because the media makes it out like the liberals are just running everybody over, but the conservatives stand pretty strong in their beliefs too. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out in the future.
Yeah, a big difference seems that one side is a lot louder with expressing their beliefs and trying to intimidate the other side, and then the other side just tends to want to be quiet and go about their daily business.
It's interesting. Can a conservative conduct an orchestra? Probably so. If you give him a chance. This from townhall.com that just highlights some of the divide in the United States. Abraham, you've got a story for us. Our final story today. This is very interesting. Some historical info here. Churchill's bid to cover up Duke's link to the Nazis. Newly declassified files show how wartime Prime Minister tried to prevent release of documents because he feared they could bring down the House of Windsor. What's in the documents? What happened?
Yeah, so this is revolves around a plot by Hitler to either abduct or convince the Duke of Windsor or the former Edward VIII. Yeah, he was the king who abdicated in the late 1930s from being king of Great Britain, and his brother became George VI. And so Edward VIII, the reason he had to abdicate was he wanted to marry the American divorcee Wallis Simpson, and the British Parliament wouldn't allow it because for reasons of tradition, and that she was a divorcee and the king would be the head of the Church of England, it wouldn't work. So he abdicated, married Simpson. And so that's where the problems began. Because, and then Edward VIII became the Duke of Windsor, so that's his title. But problems began because Wallace Simpson was a known Nazi sympathizer. The Duke probably wasn't, I'm not sure. It's still up to pretty fierce debate whether he was or it was just his wife's influence. But before the war, she would frequent parties and dinner dates with very high-ranking Nazi officials throughout Europe. And when the war began, Churchill didn't want them in Britain because he could represent a threat to the George VI. So they went to Portugal. And when they were in Portugal, Hitler had a plan that if Germany did conquer Great Britain, that he would set up Edward VIII as king.
Hmm.
And he based this around some comments the Duke of Windsor made, saying that he was very angry he had to abdicate, and that Hitler was banking on his antagonism would make him turn against his own country, basically. And so this is interesting because this has been not necessarily a conspiracy theory, but people have had this idea for a while that if Operation Sea Lion was successful, that Edward VIII would become basically a Nazi king. What's really interesting, I think, is that the Germans were trying to talk to him and coax him back to Germany. And the Duke told Churchill, and Churchill moved them to Portugal and then later to the Bahamas to get away from a possible subversion from Hitler. So I think it's just really interesting that this went on in the background of the war, and that there was a battle over the kingship of Great Britain, in a sense, that Hitler was still very mindful of that institution. Even if he were to conquer Great Britain, he was going to have his own puppet king over the island.
Yeah, it's fascinating, because what made him susceptible potentially to Hitler was that he couldn't control just his life. You know, the fact that he went after this other lady and, you know, and then had this animosity towards Great Britain there. It just was an open door for his bitterness, his anger, because he's made poor choices. And it's just fascinating how that opened the door there for the Nazis to maybe almost get a hold of him. If he hadn't taken that path in his personal life, I don't think they would have even ever thought of something like that. But it just highlights how, you know, again, you let something like that get into your life and all of a sudden the door is wide open for more attacks.
Yeah, well, and I think it's it also highlights that he obviously made the wrong choice, the King Edward VIII, because he abdicated. He put his lust or his desire to marry Miss Simpson over his duty to his nation. And in the end, he almost became the most infamous king in all of history.
Yeah.
Because if this did happen, he would be remembered as the absolute worst king ever. And so for betraying his country. And so most of this is because of Mrs. Simpson's influence. And she was a notorious person in society where a lot of affairs, very shady character. And so a lot of people in Great Britain saw this, and British Parliament did I think there's some intervention there in making sure he wasn't king, because imagine if he was king, Mrs. Simpson would have been queen, or at least duchess of something in England, and then they're trying to fight the Nazis when you have a sympathizer on the throne. You wouldn't have the inspirational leadership of George VI and his great friendship with Churchill. You would have had the opposite, and Churchill probably wouldn't have become prime minister, or maybe there would have been no war, because he wouldn't have allowed Britain to declare war on Nazi Germany. Who knows what could have happened? But it's very providential that he did abdicate for the sake of Western civilization. So it's interesting to think about this and how one man's personal weakness almost destroyed the entire British Empire.
Yeah, well, and it highlights, too, that, you know, people could say, well, what's the big deal? He can marry who he wants. Well, that's the big deal. You could have been overrun by the Nazis.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's a biblical principle, too. Queen Bathsheba is telling her son Solomon before he became king, give not your strength unto women, and I'm sure that applies to women, unto men as well. But when you are a manly man in charge of an entire nation and you let your life get run by a relationship, then all your strength is gone. Especially marrying a Nazi sympathizer of all things, that's just such a horrible idea, and it really could have changed the entire course of history.
So it's always interesting to me when situations like this come up, and I think, well, come on now. I mean, you're like going to be the king. Surely
there are some non-Nazi sympathizers.
You've got a few choices. I don't think you're that hard up for maybe a relationship. Maybe peruse a little more. I never understand that.
Yeah, well, and it kind of highlights the this, I think, has been a tough year for the British monarchy, is Editor-in-Chief Gerald Fleury wrote in that very powerful piece on the Trumpet. And these documents being declassified are, I think, another knock against the House of Windsor, showing how close it was to complete collapse and disaster during the war. And that for the Queen Elizabeth's grandsons, because Prince Harry wants to marry that actress, and there's a big row over that.
Sure.
That you have to be careful who you marry, because it could end up costing you your country, or in this case, your duty, and just being remembered as a rather infamous character and having a life of unfulfillment, because in the end, Mrs. Simpson would marry around with, or sleep around with, other men other than the Duke of Windsor. So it was a very unhappy life he lived after this decision. And so it's a warning to future monarchs of Great Britain what to avoid. But unfortunately, it seems like many of them don't heed the warning, the very obvious one that's in here.
Yeah, I mean, for most people, if you make a mistake in your life, it affects you and your family, and it might ripple down a little bit. But when you have that much responsibility, your personal mistakes, as you pointed out, can ruin a nation. And that's why it's important. That's why character is important in leaders, because their decisions affect everybody. And we don't seem to care too much about that these days. Everyone thinks it's a reality show. But it does get real really fast when it starts to affect your life, what the leader does.
Yeah, and that's a great point just about that keeps being emphasized, is that personal morality of a leader can bring down a whole nation. But in contrast, I think this story too, to me, illustrates the great deal of character Churchill had, that he actually supported the monarchy. He supported Edward VIII in his decision because he was loyal to the throne, even though he was wrong to do so. But even this, he could have exposed the Duke. He could have been very angry, but instead he wanted to preserve the reputation of the British royal family. And I think there's a great deal of character and wisdom in what he did. And one of his great loyalties was to that throne. And that's a key part to why he could do what he did during the war.
Yeah, that's a great point, too. It wouldn't stay quiet today, that's for sure. That's all the time we have for Trumpet Radio Live today. Thanks for joining us here on this rainy Tuesday in Edmond, Oklahoma City. And thanks for joining us online as well. Make sure you listen for the Key of David program and the Trumpet Daily Radio Show coming up soon. For myself, Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon, Abraham Blondeau, have a great rest of your day. Talk to you tomorrow.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.